As Republican presidential hopefuls Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio spar on immigration, a recent poll shows that the issue is not a decisive factor among GOP voters. This week, on the campaign trail, we'll talk with a guest immigration law expert about where the candidates from both parties stand on immigration reform and how the issue resonates in different parts of the country. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, December 24th. Our guest is Rick Sue, a professor of immigration law and local government law at the State University of New York at Buffalo and a visiting professor at Harvard Law School. He used to clerk in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and worked in the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being with us. We decided to have this conversation after we saw an Associated Press poll that shows that for most Republicans, immigration is not a make-or-break issue in their vote for president. 56% of conservative Republicans say that they either prefer a candidate who would keep the immigration action that President Obama took last year to allow some immigrants to apply for temporary legal status, or could imagine voting for a presidential candidate who would. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's interesting, given the poll and the fact that immigration is such a big issue, at least in the presidential debates. But I think what's going on is that a lot of the concerns about immigration are actually connected to things that American people are really concerned about, which is insecurity over the employment picture, insecurity about terrorism, concerns about sort of their daily lives. And somehow, with regard to the debate, immigration has become associated with all those particular issues. So when people think about immigration specifically by itself, it may not be a make-or-break issue. But the fact that it's connected in these days to so many of these other issues they are concerned about makes immigration at the forefront of the presidential debate.
Yeah. 40% of Republicans say they support a pathway to citizenship, compared to 54% of all Americans, regardless of political affiliation. Would you say that Republicans have been softening their stance on immigration over the past few years?
In fact, I think if you take the statistics with regard to path to citizenship, if you include legalization, the figure is actually much higher. It's about two-thirds of all Americans and a majority of Republicans. I think, if anything, the recent debates and sort of the hard lines that people are drawing may actually be making individuals more rigid with regard to the immigration issue. But I think a lot of that is the political rhetoric that's been going on in recent years, in recent days.
Among Hispanics, 74% say they support a pathway to citizenship. How big a factor will Hispanics be in next year's elections?
I think it'll be big, and I don't think it's just for this election. I think it'll be big going forward. I think immigration is a significant issue for Hispanics and all, many other groups. But I think also more connected to that is how the parties are presenting themselves in terms of how, let's say, big tent they are with regard to who they see as a part of their party. And I think that's going to resonate. People adopt partisan affiliations, and those tend to stick. And the truth is, a lot of immigrants are unaffiliated when they first come. But as they get assimilated into domestic politics, they start developing a sense of where they belong. And this has been going on not just with regard to the recent cycle, but throughout history with regard to immigration as a matter of politics for many years.
So 34% of Republicans say they could vote for a candidate that they disagree with on immigration, provided that they see eye to eye on other matters. So how significant do you describe the issue of immigration to GOP voters?
I think right now it's, 30% I don't think is, it's certainly not the majority of the party. So I think that immigration is still a major issue. I think more than anything else is that a lot of the issues Americans are concerned about are quite complex, and they have structural explanations and solutions that are really hard to decipher in sound bites. Immigration, however, is easy, right, at least with regard to the way it's being discussed right now. So I think in some ways it's become much more of a red line, a wedge issue that is easily exploited in this particular case. So although I don't think that in the general sense that people are necessarily sort of very hardline themselves about immigration policy, I think it becomes a way of trying to define which candidate represents them in terms of what their interests are.
Well, let me ask our listeners, how important is the immigration issue to you, especially in the presidential race? Is this a decisive issue, or do you think that other issues like foreign policy or national security or the economy are more important? Which candidate do you support more when it comes to immigration reform? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are examining the immigration issue and how it is playing out on the campaign trail. Gary on Facebook writes, once again, the media has been twisting things around and making it look like there is no distinction between legal immigration from people who break the law and enter the country illegally. Immigrants are those of us who entered the country legally, and illegal aliens are those who have not. Immigration is good. Breaking the law is not. The debate is how the law should be enforced and how to ensure that people who wish to harm us are kept out. Well, what do you make of Gary's take on this, Professor Sue?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important to make that distinction, but I think it's also very important to understand the way the law is designed. I think it's actually telling that Gary thinks that immigration is good and that it's something that we should be considering. But what we should be considering then is what our legal methods of actually entering the country actually is. And that's not something that we've been talking a lot about in the presidential debates, right? We've been drawing a very distinct legal-illegal line, but we haven't really talking about how that line is drawn and whether or not, given the demand and the people that want to come here and the people that will do good for the country, whether or not the current legal system that we have set up actually accommodates that. And the truth is, a lot of the problems that we have sort of emerged with regard to unauthorized immigration is connected to the fact that the legal system we have set up is not adjusted to the realities with regard to the individuals that want to come, individuals that have family connections, and the individuals that want to come to work.
So you're saying that part of the illegal immigration problem is due to problems in the legal immigration system?
Oh, certainly. I think that's a big component. The cross-border flow has been in place for a century, right? It was only until we imposed a very small cap of 20,000, a little more than 20,000, on every country, including Mexico, that we produced this particular problem. So flows that were considered legal before, or flows that weren't considered a big deal because we had a lot of seasonal migration, suddenly became split among the legal-illegal line. So when we talk about whether or not immigration is legal or illegal at this point, I think we have to examine the legal rules that we have going on. When you have laws that don't fit the situation, people, to complain about law breaking at that point also requires us to reexamine the way that we design laws. And we've done this, right, with regard to the war on drugs, with regard to excessive incarceration, with regard to all sorts of other issues, speed limits. We have to tailor the laws to exactly what the country needs at any given point. And that's something that we haven't been talking about.
Yeah. Well, we can talk more about that. But I also want to talk a little bit about this last line of Gary's comment where he says we need to ensure that people who wish to harm us are kept out. How much of a link would you say there is between immigration, illegal immigration, if Gary wants me to say that, and national security?
I don't think the link is really that big, and I think it's one of the things about immigration recently that has sort of exploded is that it's easy to connect to all sorts of other issues and feelings of insecurity. There are certain concerns with regard to immigration that's unauthorized, but with regard to national security, I think it's very low. In fact, I think if we're really looking at that, the southern border, which everyone is talking about building a wall, is probably not the biggest concern. Visa overstays, domestic radicalization, even the northern border with Canada is probably more of a concern. But it's not clear that border security or building larger fences is going to be the best way to resolve those particular issues. I think intelligence, cooperation with different local communities, cooperation with local law enforcement is going to get us a lot further than trying to build a wall. It's not going to, given that national security is really based on very small, discrete threats, very distinct individuals, that this larger immigration question, or tying it to the larger immigration question, is really the way to go.
Well, we're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking with our guest about immigration issues, immigration reform, and how the issue is being debated on the campaign trail. And we wonder what questions you have or what views you have on this. Is there a candidate that you support more when it comes to immigration issues? When we come back, we'll also talk about the debate between presidential hopefuls Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and what that is all about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is a professor of immigration law, Rick Hsu. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Every Thursday at this time, we examine issues making news on the campaign trail, and today the issue is immigration, immigration reform. Who supports what when it comes to immigration reform, and how important is this issue to you? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest immigration law expert. Rick Hsu is a professor of immigration law and local government law at the State University of New York at Buffalo, also a visiting professor at Harvard Law School. And we welcome your questions and your views for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. How important is it for you to have your candidate support comprehensive immigration reform, which includes a pathway to citizenship? Do you think that that is the way to go, or do you think that we need to be stricter in enforcing laws that are on the books? Do you think that undocumented workers or immigrants should not be rewarded with any pathway to citizenship? How do you feel about this? Let's talk a little bit about a current debate on the campaign trail. We are seeing Senators Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz getting into it during the last debate. Cruz accused Rubio of supporting amnesty for undocumented immigrants. Rubio accusing Cruz of being disingenuous. Professor Hsu, what's going on here?
I think there's a really interesting sort of dynamic, which is that the immigration debate has sort of evolved a lot since the presidential debate began. And I think in a lot of ways, Trump really sort of framed the debate, and everyone's now trying to sort of chase that particular perspective. There was a time, I believe, that both Cruz and Rubio, although disagreeing on some of the finer points, really was in favor of something be done about immigration, right? Reforming the legal system. Finding some way with regard to dealing with the undocumented populations here. But now it's become a political football, right, with regard to who can align themselves better with the Trump position as they're chasing the front runner.
Well, so remind me, didn't Rubio, wasn't he a part of a group, a coalition of senators that was trying to get something done on comprehensive immigration reform?
Oh, he definitely was. He was part of the Gang of Eight in the Senate. That was addressing the comprehensive immigration question, and I think at the time when they were having that debate, there was a lot of support. I think overall, including strong support within the Republican Party, to do something about immigration. That particular effort collapsed, and since then, immigration was then dormant. And then, as it resurged, it's really taken on a much harder line. And as a result, I feel like the politicians at this point are trying to realign themselves with regard to the way the debate is currently framed right now.
So then Rubio would double down on his line of attack, highlighting Cruz's support for an amendment in 2013 that would have doubled the number of green cards and increased fivefold the number of visas for highly skilled foreign workers. And Rubio said, I think Ted wanted to not talk about legalization during the primary and leave himself the option of being for it in a general election. I don't think that is fair to the electorate, he told CBS's Face the Nation. So he's trying to say Cruz supported more legalization, too?
Yeah, I mean, he was. There were sort of two different debates, one with regard to what to do about the approximately 11 million undocumented immigrants that are within the United States, and also about how to reform the particular legal system. And a lot of what Cruz was talking about was with respect to temporary guest workers. So although they would be legally coming here, they would be sort of connected to employment purposes and for a limited amount of time and really governed by employers. There's various facets to the immigration debate. So in some ways, they're hinging on different different components with regard to their disagreement. But what's interesting is that it's become recently a shorthand for whether you're pro or anti in a very sort of blunt, black and white kind of way, and all the nuances that has sort of been kind of wiped away.
Yeah. Meanwhile, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush took the opportunity this week to knock both Cruz and Rubio, saying it was so typical of two senators debating about filing amendments and calling it success that they were, quote, arguing about something that didn't happen and making a big point about it. Then Bush reaffirmed his own plan for those who want to earn legal status, including not getting federal assistance, learning English, and not committing crimes. So who is Jeb appealing to?
I think Jeb is looking at the general electorate. I think Jeb is looking at the vast majority, I think, of Americans overall, that thinks with regard to the unauthorized immigrants that are currently within the United States that something must be done, that living in the shadows outside the law is not only bad for them, but really bad for American society as a whole.
Yeah. And Cruz's amendment that, I mean, they really were just fighting over an amendment and who said what when, and it was very confusing. Cruz's amendment would have stripped language from the 2013 Senate Immigration Reform Bill giving illegal immigrants a pathway to citizenship, but would still allow them to apply for work permits and permanent residency after 10 years. So he was trying to give them somewhat of a pathway.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the debate within the GOP especially has really divided between whether or not something is amnesty or legalization or some other moniker that they're using. There is a difference of whether or not there would be a path to citizenship or whether or not it would just be some sort of long-term legal status. But in terms of how to, with regard to treatment of individuals who are here outside of law and authorized, both plans would have brought them out of the shadows. And I think that at the time that that was being debated, there were fine lines between them, but it would have been better than the current system we have now.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Donald Trump is saying deport them all, right?
He is. And again, it's as I think comments a lot, the way that he's been framing the immigration debate, it sounds very simplistic. It sounds very sort of clear, black and white. But the logistical issues and the amount of turmoil and chaos that would bring about would be tremendous.
Yeah, well, I mean, from your viewpoint, that cannot be done?
I think it would be a very difficult, nearly impossible to get to deport or remove 100%. I think you can remove a lot at extreme cost, and the dragnet would be tremendous. Smaller efforts in the past with regard to raids, let's say in the 2000s, with regard to other repatriation efforts in early American history, where we've maybe removed 1,000 or 2,000, are extremely controversial even today. And I think there's something really interesting about how immigrants are dispersed and how it affects how we think about removal. The fact is there are a lot of communities in which there are a lot of immigrants, and there are many communities which there are not. So when people talk about removal or deportation or mass deportation, oftentimes what they're thinking about is the effect of that would be on very specific communities, and lots of parts of the country may not experience it at all. So there's sort of a different perspective in how people are thinking about it, right? Because for a lot of individuals, let's say a lot of the major cities, this would be a catastrophe. Whereas for a lot of individuals who don't have a lot of immigrants in their community or don't see it on day-to-day, this is sort of a hypothetical sort of policy that they're thinking about in terms of the actual impact.
On this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we are examining immigration in the presidential race, and we are welcoming your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest, Rick Hsu, a professor of immigration law and local government law at State University of New York at Buffalo, is talking with us about the stands of the candidates on immigration issues and the laws, the immigration laws, and the attempts to change those laws. And we wonder what you think. What's the best approach? Do you have a candidate that you support the most over this issue? Jerry on Facebook says, I can see where the Republicans have been so accepting to those wishing to enter the U.S., kind of like the way some want a religious test in place for those entering the country, or like the way some would block refugees from entering their state or community. I also do not think the current vetting process is anything to be taken lightly. I would bet there are legal citizens on our street who would have a hard time passing the high bar that is set for admission to this country. Well, I got a lot to talk about there, Professor Hsu. Is there a high bar set for admission to this country?
There is, and the bar is obviously very different from there was a few issues sort of raised there. The bar is very different with regard to the admission of refugees, which, especially for the Syrian refugees, have been vetted extensively in over 2 years. But there's also a very high bar with regard to legal immigrants as well, in terms of what they have to satisfy, in terms of their financial and qualifications, whether they have family connections. And there is a high bar with regard to relatively high bar with regard to naturalization, in terms of what they have to know, in terms of what they the process they have to go through. I myself naturalized, so I went through that process itself. But I think what it reflects is, in some ways, how we think about immigration and how we think about who gets to come here. In a lot of ways, is a reflection of how we think about ourselves as a people. And oftentimes, immigrants become this sort of mirror in terms of what we're gauging the American people as a whole. And sometimes we see them as passing a higher bar and more hardworking and doing all sorts of great things. And sometimes we see them as a threat and as a concern and sort of representing sort of the things that we might be concerned about. So a lot of times when we're talking about immigration, I think we're really talking about ourselves and American society as a whole.
Yeah. You know, I didn't know that you were naturalized. My father was naturalized.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was born in Italy, and he came here in like 1915 or so. He's just a toddler, but he, we are a nation of immigrants, and what I was going to say though is that while I think about that, I also the critics of immigration reform would say, well, yeah, your family came here legally and, followed the rules and, followed the process. And, those who come legally, fine, but those who don't shouldn't be rewarded. What do we think about that?
I mean, I think we really have to consider the system that we set up. I mean, there's a reason why we really didn't start addressing the unauthorized immigration problem until past 1965, because it was really the way that we designed the 1965 Act that really created a lot of the problems that we have today. Cross-border flows from many countries, especially Mexico, that we're dealing with now, has been very common. It was only until that we changed the system, making it more difficult and making it extremely difficult for people from certain countries to come legally, that we started creating this problem. The backlog, the line that people talk about, is dramatically varied because of these quotas. Coming from certain countries, the wait, even if you have a legal option already on the table, you've already qualified, the wait because of our per-country blocks can be a decade or more, sometimes 2 decades for certain preferences with regards to certain countries. That is not when we talk about the line, we have to keep that in mind.
Let's go to Pat in Nisida. Hello, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
You touched on a lot of things that I was going to address, one of which is my father's family came from Ireland in the mid-1800s, moved just outside of Madison. My mom came over as a two-year-old from Scotland and became a citizen. My question is, if we enforce the laws that we have in place now, my thought is that all the yelling and screaming and running in circles that we do now, it's hard to reshuffle the deck when we haven't taken care of the laws we already have in place. And the other issue that I feel strongly about is, and it's not very Christmas-like, but maybe the dumbing down of our electorate, that it's embarrassing to me currently as an American that we have one party that has Donald Trump leading, and the other party, Hillary Clinton. One, in my opinion, is dishonest, and the other one is a game show host. It's embarrassing as an American where we are at politically right now.
Yeah, Pat, but you said, let's just enforce the laws we have on the books? What about those who are in the country illegally?
Well, I am not well-versed in our immigration laws. However, that being said, I think we need to enforce the laws we currently have in place and see how it shakes out after that. I don't know how we can. It seems that everybody's screaming, shouting, yelling, running in circles, waving their arms, and I'm not sure when it's all done that anything's going to change.
Professor Sue, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is that it's easy to say, and I think this is part of the debate, that we should just enforce the laws, as enforcement is something that's just sort of an afterthought. I think what we've sort of seen over time and over history is that how we enforce and the impact that we have in enforcement oftentimes is part of the issue, right? So when we the last time we passed amnesty in 1986, the counterpart to that was that we would start enforcing it through employer restrictions. That's why every time we apply for a job, we fill out an I-9 form, we confirm. But what they found out and what we discovered soon after, and actually the states were discovering it already before that, is that dramatic enforcement through employers is actually quite difficult and raises a lot of sort of issues on its own. We did enforcement in the early 2000s. We were doing neighborhood sweeps. We were doing big employment raids. There was a big raid in Postville. There was a big raid in New Bedford. Again, right, the federal government came out and said, look, we're enforcing laws. This is great. But what we saw on the ground with the communities that were affected was extreme chaos, extreme controversy, extreme backlash, and eventually the Bush administration backed down from that as well. We also saw immigration under Obama. A lot of it was being funneled through particular communities and cities and using local law enforcement as the front lines for enforcement. But then the local governments in a lot of states started rebelling. And they weren't rebelling because of some big disagreement about broader immigration policy. They were rebelling because it had dramatic consequences with regard to regular law enforcement in their communities. So when we think about enforcement, it's not just whether we enforce or don't enforce. It's how we do it. And to understand that whether or not at some given point the cost of enforcement is actually greater than the benefit that we get out of it. And it's usually at that time that we have to start thinking about whether or not the legal system that we have currently right now is really the best system in terms of what the goals and interests of America as a whole is. And that's something we have not talked about, right, in that sort of broad sense, is what do we really want, what is best for America, and how do we design a system that gets us closer to that?
Well, let's pose that to our listeners. What kind of system do we really want when it comes to immigration? What do you think the system should be like? What do you think about the reforms that need to take place or not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are discussing immigration issues on the campaign trail with Rick Sue, a professor of immigration law and local government law at the State University of New York at Buffalo, also a visiting professor at Harvard Law School. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back and take more of your calls. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and on this Christmas Eve edition of On the Campaign Trail, we are taking a look at immigration issues on the campaign trail in the presidential race. Our guest is a professor of immigration law, Rick Sue, and he's talking with us about the different stands of the different candidates and talking about how this issue resonates with voters. And we're welcoming your questions and wondering what kind of a immigration system or what kind of immigration reform you want to see. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Joseph in Wausau is with us. Hi, Joseph.
Oh, good morning, Rick and Joe. I'm wondering if Trump wasn't in, had such a 20-point lead in the polls over his closest competitor, if they would even be talking about the immigration topic as much as they are, if it would just be security and the economy. And, you know, he is saying deport all illegals, but the Republicans, they've been talking about immigration for years, and they want to walk a fine line of appeasing their constituents, or, you know, but they never do anything about it. Now I think finally it's, you know, they're going to have to touch that third rail and give their true stance on immigration as far as, I'm for just better vetting and, you know, that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah. All right. Well, Joseph gives Trump credit for making immigration an issue in this race, thinking if he also wasn't in the lead, nobody would be talking about it. Did you have some thoughts on that, Professor Sue?
I mean, I definitely think so. I don't know if no one would be talking about it. I think immigration is an issue that's been hanging around. And actually, it's a good time to be thinking about immigration in terms of the current flows. But I do think that he has certainly polarized it and really drew really clear lines on the ground and forced the party and the debate as a whole into a sort of a very a rigid position, right, or trying to deal with it in not a very nuanced way, but really trying to think about it in terms of black and white. I've also think that he's framed it in such a way to not only connect it to economic and security issues, but in a way that's actually quite misleading. You know, the way that he's been presenting it now seems like the immigration from Mexico is sort of swarming the country. But the reason why I say it's a good time to be talking about it is actually the border is about as secure as it's been in recent history. Immigration from Mexico is actually net negative right now in terms of the individuals leaving versus individuals coming, where there's more individuals leaving any given year. The undocumented immigrant population is relatively stable. It's been stable since the beginning of the Great Recession. So this idea that we're dealing with an impending emergency that's happening right now is really a misconception that Trump has been fostering, which is regretful because given the lull that's going on right now, this is the best time to have a rational immigration conversation about what to do going forward, especially as we anticipate that Mexican immigration is going to continue to drop and immigration from other countries, China and India, which is combined already way overtaken, 2-to-1, Mexican immigration. That's what we should be talking about in terms of designing immigration policy for the future, instead of fighting a boogeyman of the past.
In an interview with Jimmy Kimmel, Donald Trump said he would build a wall along the Mexican border to keep illegal immigration down, but that it would have a big, beautiful door for people to come in legally. But as, you know, and as our caller mentioned, Trump's poll numbers continue to climb after he says these things, and does that mean that people are latching on to the potential of putting up a big wall with a big, beautiful door?
I'd be interested. You know, he's talked a lot about the wall. He hasn't talked about much in terms of policy about what that door would look like and how beautiful it would be. And that's something that I welcome, I think, into the conversation. On the other hand, I think the idea of the wall resonates, right? I think that as we talked about in the beginning of the show, immigration resonates because it's been latched on to all sorts of insecurities. And let's be frank, it's a time, I think, in American society right now where everyone feels very insecure about a lot of different things. And there's something comforting about a wall, and I think that's what he's sort of hinging on to, that this is going to protect you. This is something that is going to solve all our problems. But it's really a mirage in a lot of ways. And so I think the imagery is very strong. I think the reality is, given the cost, given what it's actually going to address, especially given that the southern border is probably about as secure as it's been for a long time, and immigration from Mexico is not going to be our biggest concern going forward, I think is slightly misleading in that particular regard.
Clinton in Appleton emails, and he says, your guest's assertion that our illegal immigration problem is due to deficiencies in our legal immigration process is nonsense. The United States already accepts more legal immigrants than the rest of the world combined. To say that our immigration system is broken because millions of immigrant wannabes cannot get visas on demand is like saying Lambeau Field is broken because the Green Bay Packers have a waiting list for season tickets. We have 12 million people in the United States who have the odd notion that an accident of geography exempts them from our immigration rules. Well, what do you say about that, Professor Sue?
I'm not entirely sure. You know, I think we need to consider exactly immigration has done a lot for this country, and I think that it's been quite important. It's the way that the country has been built. I think that this idea that we're going to somehow close off the borders and that would be best for America, I think it's false. I think it's worth considering. I also think that we have to understand that the 12 million people that are here, they are in a lot of ways a part of America already. They're working. They have many of them children that are U.S. citizens. They've been integrated into the community as a whole. It's the legal lines that we're drawing, distinguishing certain individuals from others. The legal lines that we're drawing that really is distorting the economic labor market, that's a big part of the problem. And the truth is, look, it might have been good if we had either a legal system or some method of enforcement that we didn't find reprehensible to keep the 12 million out to begin with. But now that they're here, right, now that we're in this situation, I think that we do have to think about something with regard to what to do about that, right? I think it's in a lot of ways very un-American to have a large proportion of the population living entirely outside the law but integrated into the community. We aren't a country that's been founded on some sort of caste system, and in some ways that's what we're enshrining in our inability to deal with this particular problem.
We haven't we've talked some on the Republican side of the ticket, but not on the Democratic side of Hillary Clinton and Martin O'Malley both said that they would use executive action to push for changes in immigration law, especially if Congress can't get anything to their desks. What do you think of executive action, that route?
I think executive action, I think having Congress deal with it and having a true national conversation about it is obviously the best thing. And we also should keep that in mind, that even if we pass comprehensive immigration reform, immigration is a fluid issue, like a lot of other issues. And therefore, it's something that we should be reconsidering from year to year going on. It should not be a sort of one solution. It's going to sort of enshrine some sort of system that will work forever. On the other hand, I think that there is a lot of merit to executive action. And I don't see it in terms of circumventing Congress or setting up a policy that the administration has set up themselves. The truth is we have certain priorities and we have certain resources with regard to what we're going to target in our immigration enforcement system. And as we do in all other areas of law, we make distinctions between what is high priority and what is low priority. So executive action that makes that determination very clear and very precise to say that there are certain individuals that are a danger to the community and are high priority and should be removed immediately. And there are certain individuals who are not and actually not imposing that big of a cost and are not big of a concern, that we should be dedicating our resources to the former and not the latter. To the extent that executive action follows that route, and that's something that we've been doing for a long time, I certainly think that's something that any good president, any good administrator of a particular system should be pursuing.
Bernie Sanders says that he would fight for comprehensive immigration reform because we cannot run an economy where millions are made vulnerable because of their undocumented status. We're almost out of time. How much of an economic issue is immigration?
I think it's a big economic issue, and I think that the way that we've been talking about it have not addressed that particular reality, which is to the extent that immigrant workers are being exploited, to the extent that wages may be depressed, a lot of it is deal with the fact that people are in the shadows, that they're afraid to report, they're afraid to assert their rights, they're afraid to challenge their employers. And as long as we keep the system that we have right now, as long as we continue to demonize, I think, undocumented immigrants, I think that that economic sort of loophole will continue to exist. And that economic concern will continue to ripple in American economy.
We always hear about immigration as being a national issue, which of course it is, but we also found a news story in which you were talking about how immigration policy is too centralized and that local governments should have more flexibility in immigration law. Can you tell us why in about a minute?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely important. I mean, different communities have different interests in immigration, whether you're talking about a rural community or a Rust Belt community. I think it's interesting that whereas a lot of communities feel that there may be too many immigrants coming, a lot of communities welcome immigrants. And they have rebuilt South Side in Milwaukee. They've rebuilt the West Side in Buffalo. I think that's something that is missing when we're talking about in the national debates, when we try to aggregate everything. Is that what immigrants can do with regard to different parts of the country, different segments of the economy, and different regions is something that we should be considering in much more detail.
Thank you very much for being with us. Rick Hsu is a professor of immigration law and local government law at the State University of New York at Buffalo and a visiting professor at Harvard Law School. Thanks very much to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We are going to talk with the author of The Power of Forgiveness, Forgiving as a Path to Freedom, coming up in our next hour. And I hope that you will join us to talk about whether or not you've ever forgiven someone or if you've ever forgiven yourself. We'll talk about forgiveness in our next hour. And tomorrow at this time, we are going to be talking, we're going to be rebroadcasting a program with a man who was born without his left hand or his left forearm. And he wrote the children's book, Different is Awesome. And we'll talk about that, what it's like living with one hand, tomorrow at this time.